On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
We are delighted to welcome back to On the Bookshelf number one New York Times best-selling author Brad Meltzer, who is just busier than a one-armed paper hanger these days. You might be seeing him on television on his new show, Decoded, that runs on Thursday nights at 9 Central on the History Channel. Or you might have read some of his earlier books, and these are the times that we have had a chance to talk to Brad before, including his comic books that he's written. Well, he's got a brand new novel, and it is absolutely fascinating. This is the most interesting thing about this novel, Brad, is it actually makes me think, wow, this would be a very cool place to work. The novel is called The Inner Circle, and it's from Grand Central Publishing. It's just available. Brad, delighted to have you back on the bookshelf.
I appreciate it, Doc. I much appreciate it.
I know you have been busy lately, talking to folks about the new book and getting the television show together and all that. How are things going with you?
We couldn't be more thankful for people's response to the book and to the TV show. It all started actually with a real story for me a couple of years ago. I got a phone call from the Department of Homeland Security, and they said to me, they wanted me to come in and brainstorm different ways that terrorists could attack the United States. And my first thought was, if they're calling me, we have bigger problems than anybody thinks, right? But I was honored to be part of what they call the Red Cell Program. And in the Red Cell Program, what you do is they would pair me up with a Secret Service agent, with a chemist, and ask us to destroy major parts of America. I guess they had read my novels and my the thrillers that I write and seen I do scenes in the underground tunnels below the White House. And they had me come in and brainstorm these ways. But what I was most struck by was they were calling me a regular, ordinary citizen. And I said, where does that idea come from? Who comes up with that? And it actually started with a man named George Washington.
Mm.
And George Washington had his own spy ring. And they used to write in invisible ink and move messages away from the British. And this spy ring was made up of regular people because George Washington said, you know what, no one will look twice at them. They're perfect spies.
Right.
And I said to my guy who used to work with the Homeland Security folks, I said, wouldn't it be great if for my next novel, for the thriller, even though it's all fiction, wouldn't it be great if the plot was that George Washington's spy ring still exists to this very day? And he says to me, what makes you think it doesn't?
Nice.
And that's what my reaction was. I said, what are you talking about? And he says, think about it. It's one of George Washington's greatest success stories. Why would they ever disband it? And I said, that's the plot for my new novel. Thank you. And that's what The Inner Circle, the new novel is called The Inner Circle, is. It's a young archivist in the National Archives finds out that George Washington's spy ring still exists to this very day. And he doesn't know who they're working for or what they're doing, but the greatest secret of the U.S. presidency is about to be revealed. And that's where The Inner Circle as a book opens.
Absolutely fascinating, and what an interesting place to work in the National Archives. Just to think about this, all of the things, you have some statistics in the book about, and I'm sure some things that you create for as you're creating the character, but there's a lot of things in here that could just as easily be factual too, about the vast number of documents that are held, and not just in one building in D.C., but in lots of other buildings, including down in caves. Another repository. How much of that?
Yeah, the book is also set in the National Archives, and I was there a couple of weeks ago. They handed me a sheet of paper. They said, guess who wrote this? I said, I don't know. They said, John Wilkes Booth. And I said, what are you talking about? Where do you store all these things? And they have treasure vaults where they keep the most important stuff. But they said, for us, the issue of space has nothing to do with having a lot of land. Space is easy to get. The issue for storing documents is temperature, how to keep the documents cool so they don't deteriorate. And so what happens is I basically got in contact with them, and they said to me, one of the things that we do is we have underground caves all across the United States. And I said, wait a minute, you're telling me you have secret underground caves all across the United States in the National Archives? I want to see those caves. And so I won't ruin the end of The Inner Circle, but when you read the last 100 pages, they are set in the underground caves that the National Archives has.
Right.
And, I dressed up the archives room because it was in transition at the moment, but what you see in the very back of the cave is real.
Wow.
And all that stuff is real. And, I know that I can make it up. I know it's fiction, but I love when you get to see things. In fact, one of my favorite stories, Ronald Reagan, during his last moments in the White House, wrote a note to George Bush that said, don't let the turkeys get you down. And he slipped it into the Oval Office desk and left it for incoming President Bush. And then Bush wrote a letter when he left office for Clinton, who wrote one for George W. Bush, who left one for Obama. It's the greatest private tradition of the modern presidency.
Wow.
And I got actually a letter a couple years ago from George W. Bush. I mean, from George Bush Sr., I should say, the dad, that said, "I like your novel, The Millionaires, and would you mind signing a copy for me?"
Wow.
And I said, "You know, you're the former president. I'll send you a free book." Right? I mean, I'll send you a coloring book, whatever you like.
Right.
And what happened was is I sent him a letter, and then when I was researching the Inner Circle, I said, "Sir, can I ask you a question for research? Could George Washington's spy ring still exist today? And more important, could you send the information about that spy ring into other presidents' knowledge by writing them in those secret letters?" And I get an email back that says, "The president wants you to have this." And as I open the attachment, George Bush sent me the secret letter that he wrote to Bill Clinton.
Whoa.
And I said, you know, for my first thought was, oh, my gosh, he sent me a secret code. So, you know, I started checking it for Freemason codes and for, you know, codes that might be in there. I checked to see if every third letter of every word spelled out, "I hate you, Bill." I'm like, what's in this thing? You know, but the truth was, it was just a really kind, amazingly generous letter. And it was these two amazing men having this really civil conversation. And it really helped inform, when I was writing the Inner Circle, how presidents should speak and how they speak to each other. And it was really fantastic to have that. And so all the details you see, when I can get them right in the Inner Circle, I like, even though the book is fiction and it's a thriller, I like having those details to be real.
That's part of what makes it fun, because science fiction has to have some science in it, or it's just schlock. And detective stories and mystery stories have to have more than just a germ of truth in them, or they're not as much fun. If there was no such thing as the archives, it'd still be an interesting story, but much more fun to think Brad has had a chance to actually see these things and to know that that the archives exist and that they have all these different places, because it's just basically the attic and the basement of America, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what the archives is. They have all these great details stored there. It is like an attic. It's the attic for America. And you know what? You know why I like it? Because I don't do gore and I don't do blood. That's not what I do. You know what I think the scariest story is a story that can really happen. Mm. And what scares me is when you walk into a dark bathroom and you hear a noise on the opposite side of a closed shower curtain. That's what scares me.
Yeah.
And so I love that. I love, you know, doing a story that can be real. I will guarantee that every listener now, when they go to the bathroom tonight, is going to be thinking of me. You know, they're going to be like, "Brad Meltzer's in my head." But the truth is, those, you know, when you read a, I love personally when I read a book and it's a thriller or it's a mystery and the details are real. I love when I learn something new. I love when I learn about the government. I love when the White House scenes are real. And, you know, and that's what I try to do. Those White House scenes we have in the book, I try to get right, because I got invited to eat at the White House a couple of years ago. So I put all those details into the novel. You get to see, you know, how do they tell you who sits next to the president? How, you know, is it like your wedding? Are there little placards that they tell? But I put those details right into the pages of The Inner Circle.
Well, another thing that makes this book fun is the idea of being in the White House. You know, I read that during the Civil War, that what kept Abraham Lincoln the busiest was dealing with people who walked in off the street asking for political favors like jobs, or asking for mercy for their sons who had fallen asleep while on guard duty, and things like that. That people just walked up to the White House, knocked on the door, and walked inside, and there's the president at work. And they said, "Excuse me, I know you're busy."
You literally used to be able to pull your car up to the White House and under the overhang to put up your roof when it was raining on your convertible. And you could just walk in and be like, is he here? And, you know, that is not exactly a good way to run the White House. But, you know, it's fascinating to learn now. What I think is even more fascinating is what they're doing today. And that is just amazing to me.
Yeah, yeah. I remember reading that Theodore Roosevelt used to take the summers off and go back to his home, Sagamore Hill. Imagine the president of the United States, if he takes more than a week now off, and then he gets clobbered from both sides. Hey, why isn't he, you know, always busy? TR, one of the great presidents, was gone the whole summer, and nobody thought anything about it. That just amazes me.
Yeah, and that's what we try. You know, on the TV show, we also try to find those real history facts. You know, we have a show on the History Channel called Brad Meltzer's Decoded. And listen, it's called Brad Meltzer's Decoded. That's the best title of all time. And, you know, I said to my wife, "Honey, what are we having for Brad Meltzer's dinner tonight?" And I said, "Yesterday we had Brad Meltzer's chicken. Tonight I'd like to have Brad Meltzer's pasta." She said, "You can go sleep on Brad Meltzer's couch." But, you know, the truth is every week we get to investigate a different mystery through history, and we'll look at Abraham Lincoln and whether John Wilkes Booth, when he killed him, did he escape? and get shot 12 days later and die, or did he actually escape and live for decades after in a way under a fake identity that nobody knew? And I know everyone thinks they know the answer to these things, but when you see the 90-year-old woman who's related to John Wilkes Booth and who's a relative and a descendant, you will rethink what you see. And that's the fun of Decoded, is really pulling apart these amazing parts of history. So, you know, Decoded gets to be the real part, and the Inner Circle as a novel gets to be the fictional part.
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Brad Meltzer, who's the author of many books, including The Book of Fate, which debuted at number one. He is also the author of the critically acclaimed comic books Identity Crisis and Justice League of America. In fact, that's the first time we had a chance to talk to Brad. And he's co-creator of the TV series Jack and Bobby. He is host and executive producer of the new TV series Brad Meltzer's Decoded on the History Channel, Thursday nights at 9 Central. And his new book is The Inner Circle. It's just come out just 2 weeks ago, I think. It's from Grand Central Publishing. And available at online and at bookstores everywhere. The character that you created, Beecher White, this is a guy who works in the archives. He sees these amazing documents every day. That's the most exciting thing in his life, because other than the kind of job he has and the kind of things he gets to see, he lives a pretty unrealized life. And that's kind of where the story takes us, isn't it? What kind of lives are we living? Are we using our time well? Are we really doing something for people and for ourselves? Or are we just marking days off the calendar?
Yeah, and you know, that's the question to me is, you know, is we are right now a society that has access to more information than any society before us, and because of the internet and Facebook, you know, we're constantly now, people are getting to get contacted from their old high school friends and junior high school friends and people they haven't seen in years or disappeared from their lives are finding us again. And as a result, we're getting thrown right back into our past. I don't care where you go, what you do, when you get an email that comes from the first girl or the first guy who kissed you, your first kiss contacts you, you are right back in your childhood again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the character in the book is he's, you know, reliving his past and working in this place that's obsessed with the past. And he really can't see his own future. He can't even find it. And that's what he struggles with. And I think that's what America's struggling with right now, as we try to find our own future and make our own destiny. And I really wanted The Inner Circle, you know, to be about that. It's about history and our own personal history, most important. And people think history is you know, some dates and battles to be memorized out of a textbook. History isn't that at all. History is a selection process. And it doesn't just choose moments and people and ram them together. History chooses every single one of us every single day. And the only question is, do you hear the call?
Mm. The character Clementine, who's the first kiss that contacts our hero Beecher, says at some point that he isn't stuck in the past; he's afraid of the future. I hope I quoted you right.
That's exactly right. No, and that's exactly where he is. And I think a lot of us, you know, we think, oh, I just like the way things were, and the way things were, and the way things used to be was so much better. And you forget that today is a point in the future you're going to look back on and say, this is the way things used to be. So you might as well make the best of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Beecher's trying to figure that out. And I think a lot of us do get stuck in the past because we are afraid of what's out there for us. But again, you know, you have to hear the call.
Right.
And I think that as even though it's an imaginary character, even though it's a thriller, I do like these things to have some kind of meaning for us. And it's what my own journey is, you know, that I'm on myself and the things that I worry about and am anxious about.
Sure. I mean, those are some of the things that you addressed in the book that came out last June, Heroes for My Son, which, again, we had the opportunity to talk to Brad about. Stories of people who were famous and people who weren't so famous but still did extraordinary things and are worthy of emulation. Another theme that seems that's going through the book, The Inner Circle, is what's real and what's not. Sometimes we accept things that we've been told just because it's the least complicated way of dealing with life. Beecher is told that his dad gets killed in a car wreck on the way to volunteer for the military, and he just assumes then that's exactly it. He never looks into it when he gets older with all the ways there are of checking things. He just accepts it, and he grew up as a boy without a dad, and that's the thing he has in common with this other character, Clementine, who's as far as she knows, at least at the beginning of the book, her dad died before she was born or ran off before she was born. She's never had a dad either. And so that's their connection in junior high school, that this rather tenuous thread that they have. We tend to do that when we are that age, though, aren't we? We tend to find the people who have been damaged or suffer in the same way that we are, so we can feel some solidarity. There is sort of a brotherhood or a sisterhood of suffering.
Yeah, and listen, we are attracted sometimes to what is destroyed, and whether we like it or not. And I think the thing is to not get pulled down into that abyss. And I, you know, as you said, in Heroes for My Son was a book I started writing for my son 9 years ago, on the night my son was born, and it wound up becoming a book that was a collection of heroes. And one of my favorite ones, that, you know, on point to what you're talking about, is the Wright brothers. A friend of mine told me this story about the Wright brothers. Every time the Wright brothers would go out to fly their plane, they'd bring enough extra materials for multiple crashes, which means every time they went out, they knew they would fail. And they would crash and rebuild and crash and rebuild, and that's why they took off. And I love that story. And I want my son to hear that story, and I want my daughter to hear that story. And I need to hear that story.
Right.
And so, you know, Heroes for My Son was all about, you know, these. It's a collection of heroes throughout history, from Rosa Parks to Martin Luther King Jr., to Jim Henson and Mr. Rogers, to Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. And the stories aren't about famous people. They're about what we're all capable of on our very best days. And to me, I love that message, and that message resonates in the Inner Circle. It resonates in Decoded. It resonates in Heroes for My Son. Everything I work on is all about that philosophy that I have, is just that I believe ordinary people change the world.
Yeah, well,
I don't care where you went to school. I don't care how much money you make. That is nonsense. It's regular, ordinary citizens who change this planet, and I love that. I think it's the best part of us.
This is a theme that goes through the Book of Fate, and the Book of Lies, and your other books, that ordinary people can do extraordinary things, but they have to be willing to run the risk of failure. And I love that story about the Wright brothers. I remember that from the book too. And I thought that means that every time they went out there, they knew the odds were really good they were going to crash, but they went anyway because they knew someday it would work.
And listen, I should leave you with that, right? There's no better life lesson I can possibly have than that. It's, you know, you have to, you know, I got 24 rejection letters on my first book. There were only 20 publishers at the time, and I got 24 rejection letters, meaning some people wrote me twice to make sure I got the point.
Wow.
But you know what? I don't look back and say I was right and they were wrong and ha on them. I look back and say, you know what? Life is subjective. And whatever it is you do, whether you host a radio show or write novels, don't let anyone tell you no. Don't let anyone tell you no. And that's, you know, you'll see that in every project I work on over and over.
Every book that you're working on and every book that you have just finished and you're excited about and you're telling about has got to be, up to that point, basically your favorite book. But no, I wouldn't imagine that one book is any more special than any others because you're...
No, it's like asking which of your kids are your favorite. You know, it's like you love them all for different reasons.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel with the books. And I feel like with each book I get to be more honest and I get to put myself out there more because I'm just more comfortable doing it.
The Inner Circle deals with Beecher White starting to realize that the world is a lot more complicated place. I kind of get the feeling that he thinks of it in terms of black and white. You know, I either do this or I don't. My dad's either dead or he's alive. My mom either lied to me or she didn't. I choose to believe she told me the truth. I choose to believe everybody that's ever sold me anything is absolutely true with me, and nobody is ever going to color the truth or tell me an out-and-out lie. Part of the realization process that he goes through is understanding that life is a lot more complicated than we'd like for it to be. And in a way, he's really been kind of stuck because of the fact that he's been afraid of the future. He's never really completely matured, has he? I mean, he's not.
I mean, that's it. What you're watching in this book is his growth. That's it. Is that, you know, and that is what growth is figuring out. Not blaming the world for everything, but figuring out the complexity of it. You know, we try to make it black and white and say, well, I won or I lost. And, you know, sometimes they're in-betweens, and Beecher's realizing it for the very first time.
As a journalist, the difficult thing about life is realizing that not everybody tells you the truth. And they may have very good reasons, as far as they're concerned, for not telling you the truth. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to stay hidden. There are some secrets that are okay to keep hidden. You don't really need to know what kind of physical relationship your parents had before they got married. That's just not anything you need to know about. But if the President of the United States, say, is involved in a situation that that shows a decided lack of good judgment or even a streak of cruelty. These are the sort of things that we as an educated bunch of voters kind of need to know about. That's part of what's going on here, too, because this president, like all presidents, has a secret, but this one is a pretty murky and complicated one.
You know, and I think when you see, I was really helped by former President Bush on this one, I will say, because what it helped me do is realize that presidents are human beings as well. What he wrote to Clinton is a human moment. And you can see the, I think when you watch a movie with a president in it, the president's always some lantern jaw guy that says, you know, get me the nuclear codes, you know, quickly, let's go to the Situation Room.
Right.
And that's the extent of their character. And it gets no deeper than that. And we've, you know, I feel like the president in this book, in all the books I've written, I never really ever write the president. I always write the aides, I write the underlings, mm-hmm. I write the daughter of the president. I'll write anybody but him because I never understood him. It was always just this big caricature. And finally getting to meet two presidents and getting to speak to them, you can see the human side of them. And it becomes, not to me, the most interesting and complex character that's there. And I love that his problems are not political, they're personal, just like anybody else's. I don't care who you are, everybody's got problems.
I think one of the best movies I've ever seen about being a president was the one that, was it Michael Douglas and Annette Bening?
American President.
Yeah, and even though it's got, you know, they always got to throw up political agendas
You love it because you felt like you understood him.
Right, he had more dimensionality. And like you say, most movies, they don't. They are a plot device at best and a diversion at worst. It's nice to realize, you know, if you're the president and you're single, it's kind of hard to date, and yet you want to. Or if you're the president and in this particular case, he's got a sister who has a very difficult life. She's got some really serious physical and mental challenges, and he's having to take care of her.
Right, you know what he wants. You can see it there.
Yeah. When you talk to presidents, and you've had this opportunity to become friendly with two of our presidents, are they surprised at the ordinary things in life? Do you feel like that they have, because of the kind of job that they've had, that they had to become, live in this rarefied atmosphere, or were they pretty able to be pretty down to earth?
You know, they go from being the most powerful man on the entire planet to someone who has to stop at red lights like the rest of us. And that, it takes a toll, right? It's a beating.
Yeah.
You go from being on the front page of the newspaper every day for 4 to 8 years, and then you're just a normal guy that nobody cares about again. And imagine in your life, if you knew right now that this was the peak of your life, that everything down here will be less special and less exciting and less amazing because you peaked. And that's heartbreaking to me. That's a complex person, and I'm fascinated by that. It's why in the Book of Fate, you know, I did that story of a former president, and
right.
It's where I get that idea from in the inner circle is watching this president deal with, you know, what he could potentially lose and why he wants it so bad. You know, when you understand that, I feel like you understand the person, not the president.
I had a personal incident that this is a small town. You work in radio in a small town, the only radio station, and you become a minor celebrity. And that's kind of fun, you know, when you go places and people hear your voice and they go, hey, you're such and such. And I did that for 15 years or so. And then I had the opportunity to be a teacher, which my wife had been a teacher all of my married life up to that point. And she said, it's going to be a lot different for you. And I thought, oh, yeah, because I'll be teaching. I won't be. Once I started doing it, I realized what she meant. When I became a teacher, which to me is an infinitely more important job than being a disc jockey, all of a sudden, as far as the community was concerned, I was kind of a non-entity. No one asked me anymore, hey, was I having a good day or anything like that. Now I'm just somebody that goes to work and is training the next generation, but not treated with any kind of deference or anything like that. And After I left teaching for a while and went back to radio, I thought, what a strange thing that is that we make celebrities out of people just because they're accessible, but the people that are doing the really hard work, nobody knows who they are.
I hear you. The only reason I'm a writer today is because Miss Sheila Spicer in eighth grade told me I could write. And she tried to switch my class. She made sure that I, you know, didn't do the homework that she was assigning. She would give me harder stuff to do. challenged me, pushed me, said, don't do this homework, don't listen to this lecture, don't do this assignment, you're going to thank me later, is what she was saying.
Wow.
And after my first novel, The Tenth Justice, came out, I went back to her, knocked on the door of my junior high school and said, my name is Brad Meltzer, and I wrote this book, and it's for you. And she was crying, and my wife was crying, and I said, you know, she said, I was going to retire this year. And I said, why? And she said, I didn't think I was having an impact.
Mm.
I said, you understand, you have 30 students, we have one teacher.
Yeah.
And I truly do think, Doc, I think teachers change lives.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they need a lot more appraise than they get, that's for sure. Well, here we have this archivist. We have this girl from his past. We have a sitting president with a very important private secret and a circle called the Culper Ring, which apparently was not disbanded at the end of the American Revolution. And the idea, I don't want to give away too much. So I'm always thinking we don't really need to talk about the story too much because otherwise I'll get carried away. But I love how you develop the characters in here. They become very real people. You care about them. Even the crazy guy who was in a mental institution because he tried to assassinate the president, he's not a cardboard character. He's in the same mental.
I work as hard on that character as any. You know, every character is vital. There's no better action in a book than good character.
I agree. And even though you've got to have the setting and you've got to have the plot, if you have weak characters, it doesn't matter if you have the best setting in the world. There's got to be a balance, and the characters have to be somebody that we can emotionally invest in, or we're not going to continue to read the book. We'll just skip to the end and see if the guy gets the girl, and that'll be the end of it. And one of the things I liked about this book, Brad, is that I'm one of those guys that if I get halfway through the book and I'm starting to wonder, gee, do I want to invest another couple of hours in reading this or not? I have been tempted in the past to skip to the end and just make sure that it ends kind of like the way I want it to, and then I'll go back to picking it up.
I've heard people do that. My friend does that. It drives me crazy.
But I didn't do that with this book because I thought, no. This is a story about a life that's unfolding. And if I jump to the end, that's not fair because that didn't happen in real life. I don't get to wake up one day and go, okay, now let's get in a time machine and see what's going to happen 20 years from now or whatever. So I stayed the course. And it was worth it because there were surprises along the way, which is part of the fun of reading one of your books. But also some lessons to be learned and growth in the characters. That's pretty great. Our time is almost over. Any thoughts about, have you thought about carrying any of these characters forward? There certainly would be an opportunity to do so.
Yeah, no. This was written with the idea that I want to write a sequel to it. And so The Inner Circle is not nearly done. And hopefully will be the start of, as many as I can. I really care about these characters a lot. And I want to come back to them. And that's been just fun for me. So I'm
excellent.
Working on the follow-up to The Inner Circle right now. And I love you and appreciate you reading this book. It means more than I can express.
Well, Brad, it is such a delight to get to talk to you. I always enjoy your work so very much. And I'm really excited to hear that there is going to be a sequel because I really want to see where you take Beecher next.
Thank you so much.
Brad Meltzer, our guest today, his brand new book is The Inner Circle. It's from Grand Central Publishing. You might see Brad on his new TV show, Brad Meltzer's Decoded, Thursday nights at 9 Central on the History Channel. Or you might have read some of his previous books and heard us talking about them on the bookshelf. Brad, do you need me to put websites in or anything like that?
If you can put in bradmeltzer.com, that's great.
Okay.
And you can find me on Facebook at Facebook.com/Brad Meltzer. But I really, as always, Doc, you're always there for us. It means more than I can express.
Go out and find them. They are worth looking for. You will really, really enjoy them. Brad, thanks again. It's wonderful to talk to you, my friend.
Thanks, Doc. As always, pal.
Our thanks again to my buddy Brad Meltzer for joining us on the bookshelf today. We will be back next Sunday morning at 9:30 on FM 94.7, Sunday afternoon at 2:30 on AM 970 and WTBF.com, our website. You can also check my website on thebookshelf.biz, and you can listen to the latest On the Bookshelf programs and also some ones that have been archived and also some of the book bits that accompany the On the Bookshelves and some other books that have been read and reviewed only. They are also available on onthebookshelf.biz. So next Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon, we'll see you right here on FM 94.7 and AM 970. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.